Now, welcome to our video audience. Good to have you with us as always. This week, Wednesday, is Ash Wednesday. It marks the beginning of the season of Lent. And growing up, I knew nothing of Lent, never heard of it. See, it's part of the Reformed tradition, especially of the second wave of immigrants that came into this country. They didn't really like Lent because for hundreds of years, the Catholics and the Protestants killed each other in Europe. They were like two political parties, like the Democrats and Republicans here, And what was happening is, these people would be getting killed and they just didn't like each other. So the Protestants got a little extreme and said, we're not going to do any of the celebrations that the Catholics do. That's why, for instance, in early Massachusetts, when it was stocked with the Puritan pilgrims, Christmas celebrations were illegal because they thought that would lure people into being Catholic. All the churches that the Protestants took over in Europe, they took all the statues of Mary down and of the saints because that was idolatry. And they kind of went to political extremes. And some of that hung over for Lent. I never saw Ash Wednesday till I was in college, and I saw people with, dirty foreheads, and I was curious about what that was all about. And, I learned, of course, and then I was in Tulsa. I moved to Holland, and, at Western Seminary, you get all kinds in there, and some people really made a big deal celebrating Ash Wednesday, others didn't. But I was amused because one of the restaurants in Holland called it Hash Wednesday. And they gave half off on their corned beef hash. And so that became a tradition for me. And I think that restaurant's still in business. I don't know if they still do that. But growing up around Dutch-speaking folks, the word Lente in Dutch just simply means spring. And that's a good way to remember it. I am going to do some things I have never done before. There's a lectionary that the Catholic Church put out, and the Episcopals amended it, that has a passage for pastors to use on a three-year rotation. And I have never been able to use that because I don't like people telling me what to preach on. But I'm going to use it for Lent this year just to see what happens. So what that means is, we'll be having the same Bible reading that Prince of Peace does down the road, that First Lutheran, the Methodists, Presbyterians, and several Reformed churches use that thing. So I just want you all to be aware of that. Today I want to talk about deconstruction of religious beliefs. Growing up, we all absorbed different things from American evangelicalism that were harmful to us spiritually. I grew up with a lot of rules of what I could do on Sunday and couldn't. Still chafes me that I could ride my horse, but I couldn't ride my bicycle. Can't understand that. Rock and roll was the devil's music, and I bought into it. Now, I had a first pressing of Sticky Fingers by the Stones, and I have an autographed Beatles White album. And they told me I had to burn them. But being a true Hollander, I didn't burn them. I just sold certain ones and kept others under my bed. Then later I realized that this was all malarkey and bought them all back. But long-haired hippies were considered anathema, and women were designed to serve men and keep quiet. Church participation, if the doors of the church were open, you had to be there. Daily devotions, you had to read the Bible with every meal and say a lengthy prayer. And if you didn't, you were a filthy heathen sinner. If you missed daily devotions, why, you were no good at all. You had to live in such a way that you don't make God mad at you. And then the benefit of it is, you get to judge people who aren't living that way. And that's the way it was. Well, none of these things have anything to do with salvation. Not a thing. They don't even help. They just turn you into a goody two-shoes, and you ignore the law of Jesus, which is this. He said, so now I'm giving you a new commandment. Love each other just as I have loved you. You should love each other. Your love for one another will prove to the world that you are my disciples. See, and that's why Christianity took off and permeated the first couple of hundred years, because they lived by the law of love instead of all these other rules that all these other religions have. But then Christianity got corrupted in this country, and it sunk to new lows. You know, we say evangelical, that used to be a good word that meant you had an emphasis on the gospel. Now evangelical just means right wing, and it has nothing to do with Christianity. So there's millions of people who are leaving evangelicalism. And there's a whole movement out there called this, ex-evangelicalism. They invented a word to describe it, where you move from this, you know, legalistic, snake-handling type Christianity to a more progressive Christianity that listens to the commandments of Jesus. So if you're considering leaving that, especially for our video audience, you're not alone. Fundamentalists all over the country are doing it. Mormons are doing it. Catholics are doing it. Muslims are doing it. The deconstruction movement is strong, and I think it's about time. Because we need to lose this religious baggage that we've all picked up. American Christianity, I believe, is one of the greatest things in the world, but it has serious flaws. And many are leaving the faith because of its support of whatever kind of politics it's supporting. So today I want to invite you to a season of religious deconstruction. Might be a good theme for Lent. You know, if you want to give up chocolates, that's fine. But that's not going to help you one bit spiritually. You know, I got such a kick out of it the last, when my daughter, my youngest, was at Grand Valley. She had a couple of roommates and never set foot inside a church in their lives, but they always gave something up for Lent. And I couldn't picture that. You know, what in the world is this about? They give up chocolate, or they give up junk food or something like that. That's all fine, but it won't help you spiritually at all. And that's the thing. Focus instead on loving and giving and serving. Forget about all that other stuff. So Paul talks about this. We're going to look at it today in Philippians chapter 3. Again, one of my favorite passages. It says this, and that's about it, friends. Be glad in God. I don't mind repeating what I've written in earlier letters, and I hope you don't mind hearing it again. Better safe than sorry, so here it goes. What he's saying is that all good preachers are not afraid to repeat the important things. And this is important. This content goes on. He says, steer clear of the barking dogs. Those religious busybodies, all bark and no bite. All they're interested in is appearances, knife-happy circumcisers, I call them. The real believers are the ones the Spirit of God leads to work away at this ministry, filling the air with Christ's praise as we do it. Steer clear of those who would impose rules on you, because they just do it to make themselves look good. It's all about ego. They're all barking dogs with no bite. You know, you see that sometimes. We had a female German shepherd who had just weaned a litter of pups about the time I graduated from high school. And I came home from graduation rehearsal. I left my gown on. And this dog's name was Queenie. And she would always greet me when I got out of my car. But that day I left my gown on. And as she was coming to the car, I just stepped out and I did like this. And Queenie freaked out. We didn't see her for 2 weeks. She just disappeared. She was hiding under an old cattle bunk, we found out. See, that barking dog was all bark and no bite. She looked like she could bite, though, because she was a German shepherd. Another expression for that where I grew up is, you know, people who like to have lots of religious rules for other people but don't follow themselves. Well, you've seen these urban cowboys, these people who wear cowboy boots and drive pickups and wear the cowboy hat, but they've never been within 50 feet of an actual cow. We call those all hat and no cattle. And there's a lot of that in religion, too. And that's what these legalists are. Okay, so Paul goes on with this. He says, we couldn't carry this off by our own efforts, and we know it. Even though we can list what many might think are impressive credentials. You know my pedigree, a legitimate birth, circumcised on the eighth day, an Israelite from the elite tribe of Benjamin, a strict and devout adherent to God's law, a fiery defender of the purity of my religion, even to the point of persecuting the church, a meticulous observer of everything set down in God's law book. See, Paul's Pharisee. And the Pharisees were, Pharisee means separated one. They were what they call the super Jews. I saw one time a car, a big old Lincoln limousine with a Star David on the side, and underneath it said super Jew. And I thought, what in the world is that? You know what it was? I was at ORU, and Jerry Lewis was coming to ORU to work out a deal with Oral Roberts to build a hospital. And he had his own limousine there, and it said Super Jew on it. You all know who Jerry Lewis is? Yeah, I'd put a picture of him up here just for fun. See, you can't even look at that picture without laughing, and I've got some stories I could tell you about what he did in chapel, but are not church appropriate, so I'll tell you later. But that's what he called himself, was a Super Jew, and that was Paul, too. Paul persecuted the early Christians, and he endorsed the execution of Stephen, who was the first martyr. So, you know, being a super Jew doesn't guarantee you salvation, and Paul understood that. He goes on with this, and he says this, the very credentials these people are waving around as something special, I'm tearing up and I'm throwing out with the trash, along with everything else I used to take credit for. And why? Because of Christ. Yes, all the things I once thought were so important are gone from my life. Compared to the high privilege of knowing Christ Jesus as my master firsthand, everything I once thought I had going for me is insignificant. Dog dung. Something that needs to be dumped in the trash. Who invented religious deconstruction? It was Paul. And the ultimate deconstruction for him was getting rid of all of these things that he'd been raised with. For the high privilege, he says, of knowing Christ as my master, he says, everything else is skubala. And that is a nasty word in Greek. It's only used this one place in the whole New Testament. And it literally means human excrement. It's not nice to think about. This passage cleans it up a little bit, calls it dog dung. Well, I always get a kick out of that statement, you know, because my office at home looks right out on Dykstra Road. And I see people walking by with these little blue bags. And they fill these little blue bags up by the time they get home. And I think, you know, that's kind of silly. But, you know, a farm boy, but if those dogs are on my lawn, I say, ah, don't pick it up, it's free fertilizer. But they'll walk around carrying these little blue bags all the time, which is why I don't have a dog myself. But in this passage, it literally means human race, or human waste, rather. Now, Diane inherited some land from her dad, and the lawyers and insurance people said, we need to make an LLC out of that, an LLC, so that we have limited liability in case somebody shoots their foot off hunting on that ground. And so we went through that process, lawyer in Iowa, lawyer here in Michigan, and dealing with all that. It's a little bit of a trick to set up an LLE in Iowa when you're a Michigan resident. But we did that, we went through the whole process. And then the interesting thing is, the lawyer calls me up from Sioux Center and says, what are you going to name your LLC? And I happened to have this passage open in front of me that day, sitting at my desk. So now if you go through the records, legal in the state of Iowa, there's an LLC named Skubala LLC. And I just thought you ought to know that. So Paul goes on with this and says this, I've dumped it all in the trash so that I could embrace Christ and be embraced by him. I didn't want some petty, inferior brand of righteousness that comes from keeping a list of rules but I get the robust kind that comes from trusting Christ, God's righteousness. See, inferior religion has a lot of rules. That's how you can tell it's inferior. The more rules it has, the less useful it is. 613 rules that Paul tried to live by. You know, we have weird rules in American culture, too, that are somewhat connected to religion, like you're only supposed to eat fish on Friday, and giving stuff up for Lent. But the real thing is trusting Jesus to save you. The real righteousness is loving and serving those around you, not some sort of hokey religious practice. And Paul hammers that home with this paragraph. He says, I gave up all that inferior stuff so I could know Christ personally, experience his resurrection power, be a partner in his suffering, and go all the way with him to death itself. If there is any way to get in on the resurrection from the dead, I wanted to do it. See, he gave this up for something better. I've told you before that when I was a kid, we had to go to church. We had to have church shoes, special outfits for Sunday. And those shoes were always a couple sizes too small because, you know, they were too cheap to buy us ones that actually fit. And I couldn't wait to get out of church as a little kid. So I get in that car. First thing I do is take those shoes off. And my sisters would do the same thing. It was not the best smell in the world. But anyway, we'd take those shoes off. And to me, that was a symbol of religious deconstruction. Getting those tight shoes off my feet, being barefoot again, having that freedom. Maybe that's why I'm a strange pastor today. I don't know. But it was there. And we got into it. So now Paul explains himself. He says, I'm not saying that I have this all together, that I have it made, but I'm well on my way, reaching out for Christ who has so wondrously reached out for me. Friends, don't get me wrong. By no means do I count myself an expert in all this, but I've got my eye on the goal where God is beckoning us onward to Jesus. I'm off and running. I'm not turning back. What a relief that Paul tells us he's not there yet. I feel like I'm just getting started all the time, too. You've got to have your eye on the goal, which is to become more and more like Jesus as the days go on and there's no turning back. I pray that all of you will deconstruct your religious misconceptions. Get rid of them. Get rid of the rules and regulations of fundamentalist America. Walk away from the religious nuts who love to harness you and control your behavior for their own ego. Paul knew this well, coming from strict Judaism. He couldn't eat pork. Can you imagine a life without pork? And now, after his conversion, he could eat a BLT, and it was okay. See, because and God didn't strike him dead for it. I appreciate that Paul used the word skubala to refer to his former religious life. In today's parlance, he'd say, just flush it down. Press forward to the future. I recommend making a list of the rules you had to follow and make that list on some nice notebook paper and then set it on fire. Not inside your house, you know, unless you got a fireplace, but burn it because it's useless. What matters is trusting Jesus to save you. What matters is knowing Jesus. What matters is how you treat the people around you. And what happens if you do this? It's the weirdest thing. Get peace in your soul. You don't have to worry about your status with God anymore. Your spiritual anxiety dissipates. The barking dogs will become quiet. And you're free to do what you're called to do. And that, friends, is a good thing. So let's believe this good news and live in peace. Let's pray together. Lord, my prayer for everybody in this room, for everybody listening to me on video, is that the spiritual deconstruction will start, the religious deconstruction. So that will remove all the scubala that's piled up on us so that we can find you. So help us to do that. That's my prayer for everyone in this room and everyone listening to my voice. Let's deconstruct our religious disinformation. Amen.